Open your Bible with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, please. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. This evening, what I would like to do is I would like to continue our examination of 1 Corinthians chapter 28, verse 9, which is our theme verse for the year, and look at this idea of seeking, knowing, and serving God. And what I'd like to do this evening is continue with this idea of seeking and examine the concept of self-control in light of seeking. So as we look at this idea of seeking, knowing, and serving God, each month I or the elders will have a thematic lesson about this idea, and we're trying to execute it in other manners as well. But as we look at this concept of seeking, the concept of seeking has various parts to it, and there's various aspects of it that are necessary for us to be successful in our search. How do we effectively seek God to where we will find Him? And what I would like to do particularly this evening is this, is ask the question, what do we need to do before we seek? There's many things that we can seek but not be successful for. It is a running joke in my family that there is something, if I am asked to find something, it is right in front of my face and I don't even see it. It is without fail. If Jessica sends me to find a pair of scissors, they will be exactly where she said they were, in that exact drawer, in the color and the placement that she said, and I'm just looking, I don't see it. I mean, it is without fail. She can send me to go get a towel, and it is just right in front of my face, and I just can't see it. And then, Jessica, I can't see it. I just can't find it. Fine, I'll come look for it. And then she looks for it, and it's right there, and there you go. I search, but I can't find. And, you know, while not finding a pair of scissors isn't that drastic, and not being able to find a towel isn't that drastic, certainly if we fail in our search for God, there's drastic consequences. And I think so often God is right in front of our faces. God is just so evident and He's so plainly there, but we don't see Him. What gets in the way of our search? How do we spiritually not make the mistake that I do when I can't find a pair of scissors? God is clearly perceived, Romans 1:20. His nature is clearly there. And if He is so evident, how do we search for Him in a way to where we will actually find Him? And I think self-control is going to have a lot to do with this. Paul uses a similar analogy to seeking in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. And rather than using this idea of seeking, he uses this idea of running. So let's read the text. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 24. We'll do 24 through the rest of the chapter. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we do it to receive an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air. But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. Here, Paul uses this imagery of a race and of a boxer to illustrate what is necessary for success in our spiritual search. Two things I would like to highlight. Number one, we have to run with aim, and likewise with this, we have to control ourselves. So let's go through this text together. Verse 24. Do you not know that all in a race run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Down into verse 26, I think what he's saying is this: I do not run aimlessly. Here's what we have to do. We have to run with aim. The runner who wins knows why they are running. They know what motivates them. They know their end goal. They know their starting point, and they know where they're getting to. We have to run with purpose. We have to seek with purpose. Verse 25, every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air. There's two ideas here. Number one, we have to run with aim. And then number two, we have to control ourselves. Athletes have self-discipline, right? Athletes are the ones who know how to discipline their bodies in order to be successful in their sport, whether it is doing laps, whether it's doing push-ups, whatever the physical endurance that is necessary. They are going to buffet their bodies to where they are then successful in their race or in their sport. What's the connection between these two ideas? Here he indeed says we need to run with aim, and he also says we need to control ourselves. But what's the connection between these two ideas? I really think these are the two themes that he's getting at here, but I think there's a connection between them. Let's look at verse 27. But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. What's the connection here? We have to know where we're going to. We have to know what our aim is. We have to know the rules, and we have to know how to get there. But once we know that, we have to be physically ready, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally ready to get there. What's the connection? Well, for us to run with aim, we can't get distracted. I think that's what he's ultimately saying. An athlete is not going to get distracted from their goal. An athlete, when they know where they're going, they're going to do everything they have to get to where they need to go. So they discipline themselves, and they have self-control to be able to get them to a physical state that is necessary for them to be successful. So I run with aim, and I'm certainly not going to get distracted because I'm going to discipline myself. So the question, I think, is then this: how do we control ourselves? Let me go and answer my original question. Why is it that God's nature and God's presence is so clearly perceived ever since the foundation of the world, but yet millions fail to perceive it? Billions have failed over the course of human history to have failed to grasp the very existence of God. Why? Well, it's because, yes, God's existence is right in front of us, but we get distracted. It's because we get distracted, right? Ultimately, whenever I try to go look for a pair of scissors, here's what happens. Whenever Jessica tells me they're on the desk, I see the desk, but then I get distracted and I notice that the pens aren't in order, and then I notice that the calendar needs to be reorganized, and then I recognize that there's a cup that's out of place and it probably needs to be taken to the kitchen, and then I recognize that I need to do this as well, and then finally I forget what I'm looking for, and then 5 minutes later, I holler at Jessica, ask her what I'm looking for, she'll holler at me and tell me the scissors, and then, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be looking for scissors, great, and I completely got distracted. I think that typifies in many ways our search for God. Yes, we have to be intent on finding God. We have to search for Him with aim. We have to search for Him with purpose. But the only way that we are going to find Him is if we don't get distracted. If we do not allow this world to distract us from Him. The question that I think is this: how do we control ourselves? I mean, I don't have to give evidence for y'all to believe that we live in a world where people lack self-control, right? I mean, it's something I think all of us struggle with on some level or another. But we live in a hyper-individualistic society where if you want it, you get it. If your heart desires it, you can have it. And our hyper-individualism has driven within us a mentality that we deserve it, we can get it, we should have everything we want. And there's really no need to control ourselves because we live in the land of milk and honey, and we have a land of such surplus that we can get anything our heart desires. Well, that's certainly not the Christian life. If we live in a manner without self-control, we will never find God. If we live in a manner where the passions of this world constantly entice us and constantly draw us away, we will never find God. We will lose our mission, we will lose our aim, we will lose our purpose, and we will never find our Creator. The only way for us to find Him is to seek with discipline, to seek with self-control. Well, how do we control ourselves? How do we develop self-control? Of course, the most famous idea of self-control in our culture is just say no, right? Just say no. This was the policy for decades in public schools about how to minimize the drug problem, drug and alcohol. If you want to minimize drugs and alcohol, just say no. I was taught this as a kid. In elementary school, I can still remember the DARE campaigns. Some of y'all, those probably before your time, but others, you can remember the DARE campaigns. And the philosophy of the DARE campaigns was just say no. It has failed miserably. I mean, it has absolutely failed miserably. At some point, we probably need to talk about this in a full sermon, about just how drugs have affected our society to every level. Drugs are taking over every state, every part of our nation. Alcohol is rampant. Just Say No has failed miserably. And for us to develop self-control, we need a better philosophy than Just Say No, right? Whenever you have someone who is struggling with substance abuse, Just Say No, right? Not that easy, is it, Pam? It's not just that easy to just say no. Whenever you have a young Christian struggling with sexual temptation, just say no. Brethren, it's not that simple. Whenever you have an older Christian struggling with their tongue, just say no. Not that simple. Whenever you have a middle-aged Christian struggling with anger, just say no. Not that simple. We need a better tactic. If the only way for us to find God is to stay intent on our aim, and the only way that we are going to stay intent on our aim is by not getting distracted, and the only way that we are not going to get distracted is by developing self-control, and if Just Say No has not given us self-control, how then do we develop a good strategy for actually cultivating self-control? I want us to go to Romans chapter 6. In Romans chapter 6, Paul gives to me just a beautiful description of the controlling influences in our life. Let's look at Romans chapter 6, beginning in verse 15. Romans 6, 15. What then? Are we to sin because we are not under law but under grace? By no means. Do you not know that if you present yourselves to anyone as obedient slaves, you are slaves of the one to whom you obey, either of sin which leads to death or of obedience which leads to righteousness. But thanks be to God that you who were once slaves of sin have become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching to which you were committed. And having been set free from sin, have become slaves of righteousness. I'm speaking in human terms because of your natural limitations. For just as you once presented your members as slaves to impurity and to lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves to righteousness, leading to sanctification. Here, Paul gives a dichotomy. There's a choice of two here. Either one, we can be controlled by righteousness, or number two, we will be controlled by sin. The reality we must recognize is all of us are slaves. All of us are slaves. All of us are controlled. While I may think that I'm my own man, and I may think that I don't need anybody to tell me what to do, and I may think that I make my own decisions, and I think that I'm in control of my life, no, not a one of us are in control of our lives. Not a one of us. We are controlled either by sin or by righteousness. It is not until I truly recognize the reality that I am not in control. There are greater spiritual forces that are in control. And I am either a slave of sin or I am a slave of righteousness. It is an awful thing to be a slave to sin. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. When we are a slave to sin, we give in to every passion and every desire that the flesh craves. If I want it, if I desire it, I give in to it. When I am a slave to righteousness, that is where self-control comes in. Because no longer am I giving in to the means of flesh, but I am availing myself over to the means of the Spirit. Looking at verse 16, Paul says, "Do you not know that if you present yourselves to anyone as obedient slaves, you are slaves to the one whom you obey, either of sin which leads to death or of obedience which leads to righteousness? But thanks be to God that you who were once slaves of sin have become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching and you were committed." I want to focus on that key word there. You were committed. Brethren, here's what I think we have to recognize. Our self-control and our commitment are mutual. If I want to develop self-control, I don't need to just say no. I need to first recognize what are the controlling influences in my life, what am I really committed to, and then how are my actions exemplifying what I'm really committed to? Someone who gives into substance abuse, what have they been committed to? It's not just a problem of will, it's a problem of commitment. Someone who gives themselves over to gossip, to anger, to sex, it's not just a problem of control, it's a problem of commitment. I am committed to the ways of lawlessness and sin rather than being committed to the ways of righteousness in Jesus Christ. I have to ask myself, where is my commitment? But brethren, just as my commitment increases, that's when my self-control increases. There's a mutually beneficial relationship between the two. There's a reciprocal relationship. As my self-control increases, my commitment increases. And as my commitment increases, my self-control increases. But brethren, for us to get self-control over the distractions that take us away from God, for us to cultivate self-control to over the things that take us away from Jesus Christ, we have to ask ourselves what controls us. There's been lots of psychological research over self-control over the last two decades. And the big question for psychologists has been, where does self-control come from? Now, remember, they're not approaching this from a biblical perspective, but they certainly have insights that are fascinating and I think useful. Generally, psychologists would agree on this. Self-control is a limited resource. And I'll explain what I mean by this. I think we as Christians are often under the idea that we have unlimited self-control. That, you know, all you have to do is just say no and you're done. Psychologists have shown us the complexities of self-control. Self-control is an emotional construct, it is a biological construct, it is a mental construct, it is a behavioral construct. It has to do with our behavior, the way we think, the way we feel. Everything relates to self-control. What they have found is this: our self-control is limited. One of the earliest studies that looked at self-control was fascinating. It was a great classical psychological study. A researcher had two different groups, a control group, an experimental group. And for one group, asked them to come in, and on a table had a plate of cookies and a plate of radishes. For group one, eat a cookie. I'm going to let y'all have a cookie. You don't even have to have a radish. Just eat a cookie. There was really no choice. You can have a cookie. They were able to give in to a cookie, right? I mean, even for those of us who seek to be health conscious, right? If you're given the choice between a chocolate chip cookie and a radish, right? Who is going to pick a radish, right? Nobody's going to pick a radish, are they, Randy? We're going to go with probably the big piece of cake or the cookie, right? We're going to go with the cookie, right? I didn't have to give over any self-control to that. Group two came in and the researcher said this: you get to pick whether to have a cookie or a radish. So group one, there's no choice. You just get a cookie. Group two, you have to decide whether or not you want a cookie or a radish. And for those who took the radish, there was some self-control that went into that. After that small test, the experiment, the researcher brought everyone together and had them to work on a puzzle, a really difficult puzzle that there was no way that they were going to be able to finish. Those who had the cookie worked on the puzzle for 19 minutes. Those who had to make the decision worked on the puzzle for 8 minutes. They were done. Those who had to give self-control over to choose between the radish and the cookie, they didn't have as much self-control whenever it came to the puzzle. Those who were able to save up their self-control and get the cookie, they had more self-control when it came to the puzzle. And so when it actually came time to work on the puzzle, they were able to put a good 19 minutes in before they got frustrated and give up. They had more self-control. Psychologically, and I think realistically, our self-control is limited. And brethren, I think one of the largest mistakes that Christians make in the fight against temptation is we think that we can just overcome anything and we are great and we can overcome it all. We need to recognize our limitations. We need to recognize that I am limited in my capacity to overcome at times. And I need to make sure that if I have to overcome a temptation, that I have saved up enough self-control that I'm going to be able to make that decision. Because if I've depleted all of my self-control by 5 p.m., and then I get home and I struggle with anger with my family, and I have none saved up, I'm going to give right into it. But if I've lived throughout the day and I've minimized the self-control that I've had to give, and then I get home and my tank is full of self-control, I'll be able to more carefully distinguish between those. The question I think we have to ask is this then. What do we have to control? Going back to my question of how do we develop self-control, again, it's not just say no. The way that we develop self-control is we recognize what we are committed to. And once we recognize what we are committed to, we have to also be realistic with ourselves of what our level of self-control is, both at the moment and over time. That's how we cultivate self-control. By truly developing commitment, by giving motivation. When I know what I am committed for to, and when I know what I am controlling myself for, when I know what my motivation is, that's when self-control will develop. That is when self-control will grow. But what as Christians do we have to control? In 2 Timothy chapter 2, Paul gives a list of qualities of things that we both have to control and things that we have to be controlled by. Let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 2, beginning in verse 22. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. You know that they breed quarrels. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, correcting his opponents with gentleness. What must we control? I think there's two main categories. We have to control our youthful passions and our controversies. And I think, looking at this in a more abstract level, I think here's what Paul's saying. We have to control our body and we have to control our tongue. If we can control what we do and we control what we say, that's when we've developed self-control. And brethren, various of us struggle with different aspects of these. Some of us really struggle with controlling our body. Some of us struggle with controlling our tongue. Let's figure out how we're going to overcome this together. Let's say that a Christian, let's just use the name John. Let's just use John. I don't think we have a John here. No, we don't have a John here. Let's say that John really struggles with slander, gossip. How is John going to control his tongue? How is John really going to be able to control what he says? Is he just going to say no? Maybe once or twice. And then he's going to go right back to it. Here's what I would tell John. John, you have to recognize, number one, what you are committed to. You have to understand the reason that you do not slander and the reason you do not gossip is ultimately because you must be committed to righteousness and you must be committed to the way of Jesus Christ. You should be motivated by the ways of righteousness and by the ways of Jesus. And recognize that ultimately what you say is either going to accord with a spiritual aspect of darkness or a spiritual aspect of light. The very words that you speak need to be motivated by righteousness. And ultimately, you need to increase and you need to grow in your commitment to Jesus Christ. But John, also this. You need to recognize realistically, right now your self-control is limited in this area. You have to make some decisions about whether to choose between the radish and the cookie. If you've given all of your energy over to choosing the cookie over the radish, you're not going to have any self-control left over to choose whether to slander or whether to speak graciously. You have to be able to be in control of what you say. Brethren, as we cultivate self-control, we must recognize and we have to ask ourselves, are we putting ourselves in circumstances where we are going to lose self-control? When it comes to the tongue, James 3 tells us if a man has mastered his tongue, he's mastered everything, essentially. And I think, like nearly everybody in this auditorium on social media, I am sick and tired of Facebook. I am so over social media, I can't even begin to describe it. I am just so over it. Because I made a commitment a couple of years ago, after I made a mistake, that I am never going to get in political battles on Facebook again. Throughout the election, I had a few opportunities where I wanted people to give their thoughts on debates, etc. And overarchingly, it was very cordial. There was nothing harsh that was said. I mean, I was very surprised by how good it was. But I occasionally get on there, and I see something that is just so stupid. I have to say something. I mean, I can physically feel my face get red. I get mad. And I just get so mad at times, I'm just about to lose self-control. I am just about to lose control, and I'm going to say something that I'm going to regret, but I'm going to say it, and they're going to know what I think. Brethren, realistically, you know what I did? I recognized I was having to exert a lot of self-control to choosing between the radish and the cookie, metaphorically. And I needed to limit my temptation to be able to say anything out of anger on that media. And so I went through steps to just minimize just the level of foolishness that I was seeing. Because I recognized my self-control is limited, and at this time, I am not going to put myself in a situation where I'm going to say something I'm going to regret. But I'm going to increase in my commitment to Christ. I'm going to follow His way of love. I'm going to live a life of peace. I'm going to live a life of faith that is committed to Him. And I'm not going to let myself be controlled by anything wicked. When it comes to the body, the same thing. We have to be able to be in control of our bodies. Or, brethren, if the passions of this world distract us, we will lose sight of our aim, and we will never find our Father. We must cultivate self-control. And I'd also recognize this. There are things that need to control us. While I should not let my tongue control me, while I should not let my body control me, I need to be controlled by righteousness, by faith, by love, by peace. These are the things that need to control me. I need to be motivated by peace. I need to be motivated by love. I need to be motivated by righteousness. I need to be motivated by faith. And I need to, in my life, be so committed to God that I am committed to His qualities and I am motivated by His ways. That is when real self-control comes. And brethren, when I increase in my commitment to righteousness, the ways of sin lose their taste. The ways of wickedness lose their appeal. As we grow in our commitment to Christ, and as we grow in our commitment to the ways of Jesus Christ, the ways of sin become far less appealing. And that's when, why would I even choose sin? Because I want to be one who's righteous and not one who is controlled by this life. So, brethren, what's the relationship between seeking and self-control? I think the relationship is this. We can seek God only once we control ourselves. And we can control ourselves only once our commitment to God Himself grows. As I grow in my self-control over the things of the flesh, I will grow in my commitment to Christ. As I grow in my commitment to God, my self-control will grow. As my self-control grows, I will see God more clearly. As I get to know God more clearly, my self-control will grow even more. As my self-control grows even more, then I will see the Father even more clearly. And brethren, we can continue this pattern on and on until infinite regress. But that is how we cultivate self-control. And what do we need to do before we even begin to seek God? We need to get out the things of distraction, put away the passions of the flesh, and we need to seek God. Get out your songbooks, please. I'm going to talk a bit psychological just for a minute more. There's a lot of interesting research that has looked at self-control. And that first study about the radish and the cookie was done about 20 years ago. And since then, that psychologist and a few others have done hundreds of studies looking to see how self-control really operates. And again, as I said, the general consensus is that self-control is indeed limited. Our self-control is limited. And as we recognize the limited nature of our self-control, psychologists have really tried to understand, how do you offset this? So if my self-control is limited, how do I offset this in a way to maximize my self-control? And for those of us who've read and listened to Romans 6, I think it would find no surprise the biggest predictor of self-control is motivation. When I am adequately motivated, that's when my self-control increases. When I am adequately and sufficiently motivated to control myself, that's when my self-control will grow, and that is when my control over making these decisions will indeed increase. We have to be motivated. And brethren, for us to be motivated again, we have to be motivated to God. Motivated to know Him, to serve Him, to seek Him, and to please Him. We must be motivated and committed to God. If anyone needs to this evening, either respond to the Lord's invitation, or let me ask this as well. I don't offer this invitation as often. But if you're struggling with sin and you're struggling with self-control, and you need the congregation to help you, brethren, as we talked about this morning, we have a family who's here to help us. And while my self-control may be this big, whenever I have the arms of my family around me, it grows. I'm motivated because people love me and they want to see me succeed. If anyone here this evening just needs to come forward and you just need help, you've been struggling with your tongue, you've been struggling with your mind, you've been struggling with your body, and you just need this congregation to lift you up and help you to be motivated to serve God more fully, come forward while we stand and while we sing.